welcome to Global Journalist on KBIA. This is the program that says mid-Missourians, indeed many Americans, are interested in international news. I'm Stuart Lurie of the Missouri School of Journalism. The big stories this week are the same as last: the American-led war against terrorism in Afghanistan and the continued warfare between Arabs and Israelis in Israel and the Israeli-occupied lands of Palestine. The war against terrorism, for the time being, goes reasonably well for the United States. The confrontation in the Middle East threatens continued bloodshed for perhaps years or even generations to come. 25 Israeli citizens were killed over the weekend by Palestinian suicide bombers in Jerusalem and Haifa. Another attack failed yesterday, but three were injured. Israel has responded with strong military action, even attacking Yasser Arafat's personal headquarters in Gaza City and Ramallah. Arafat is under pressure to rein in the Palestinian terrorists. His leadership is seriously threatened. To discuss all this today, we have in Beirut, Lebanon, Magda Abu Fadl, director of the Institute for Professional Journalists at the Lebanese American University. In Savignan, Israel, Jay Bushinsky, the dean of international correspondence in that country, and a correspondent for WINS Radio in New York and many other radio stations in the United States. In London, Sean O'Grady, a commentator for The Independent. And in Washington, Martin Schramm, a national columnist for the Scripps Howard News Service. Welcome to all of you. Jay Bushinsky, let's start near the scene of all the recent violence. Yesterday, Prime Minister Ariel Sharon's government gave Yasser Arafat 12 hours to round up a list of dangerous terrorists. He started with the leader of Hamas itself, the militant and violent organization that took responsibility for this past weekend's bombings. But apparently, he could not hold the man. How are the Israelis reacting?
Well, first of all, Stuart, I just wanted to say it's not only nice to be back in touch and on the air with you, but that I must make an editorial correction. I am in Jerusalem, right near the scene where it actually happened, unexpectedly perhaps, but Jerusalem is where we are. And the people here, I would say, are pretty calm, much more so than they were, let's say, over the weekend when all of the suicide bombings were taking place. The change in the mood here occurred when the military operations got underway, and finally the Israeli people had the feeling that somebody was doing something about all this.
Well, somebody is, yes, but Arafat himself has promised to do something. Has he done anything that is satisfactory?
No, not from the Israeli point of view, not at all. He didn't get that list 12 hours before the deadline. He's had that list for weeks, probably months. There are more than 31 wanted Palestinians accused of terrorism by Israel whose names were submitted to the Palestinian National Authority and its security and intelligence branches, as I said, weeks and months ago. And the part of the problem here is that nothing is done to apprehend these people or to prevent them from conducting their various activities. That's why Israel drew the line and turned against the Palestinian police and intelligence and the National Authority itself, especially because some of the police and even the presidential guards were actively involved in some of the terrorist operations of the past few months.
Jay, the leader of Hamas is a man named Ahmed Yassin. He was placed under house arrest yesterday, and apparently Hamas forces removed him from the control of the Palestinian Authority. Is that correct?
That's correct. Actually, Sheikh Ahmed Yassin is a paraplegic. He's been paraplegic virtually since childhood, confined to a wheelchair. He was placed under house arrest, presumably to prevent him from issuing directives to his followers that might lead to further terrorist operations. But his supporters refused to accept this kind of a thing and demonstrated incessantly against the Palestinian police who were keeping him inside the house, and eventually they broke through the Palestinian cordon and kissed his hand and, in effect, liberated him from this house arrest.
Magda, let's bring you into this discussion. What do you think about Yasser's prospects for continued leadership in Palestine?
Well, I was interested in a BBC report that said its correspondent had said that the demonstrations around Sheikh Ahmed Yassin's house confirmed the fears of the Palestinian Authority that carrying out arrests under pressure from Israel will put it on a collision course with its own people. I mean, it seems that Prime Minister Sharon is upping the ante and demanding a lot from Yasser Arafat, who I doubt can deliver at this point. I mean, his hands seem to be tied, and there's a state of siege on Palestinian territories, and I'm not so sure that he can come through with this. And then if Israel really has a beef with Hamas, why doesn't it attack Hamas? Why is it attacking the Palestinian Authority?
Marty Schramm, Sean O'Grady, you want to react to that?
Well, it seems to me that that the questions raised are all valid. You know, as I'm trying to look back at what was Hamas really trying to prove in this last series of suicide bombing attacks, I begin to think they were trying to prove it, to do the same thing in their way for their cause that Osama bin Laden was trying to do for his, which is to say, provoke an overreaction. I think that Osama's real plan was to try to provoke an overreaction so severe that the United States would kill so many thousands of innocent Islamics that in, for example, neighboring Pakistan, there would be an uprising, and that way Osama actually would have the bomb when he took over Pakistan. I think that's what they hoped for. In this case, I think that Hamas is hoping for such an overreaction that it will torpedo once and for all the prospects for General Zinni, President Bush's emissary, to try to push the cause of peace. I think they're concerned that peace prospects could have been gaining strength, and I think they're trying to torpedo that once and for all.
Sean O'Grady?
Well, you asked about Yasser Arafat.
Yes.
And it didn't look very good for Yasser Arafat before all this started, because I think at one point that's sometimes overlooked is to realize how long in the tooth Yasser Arafat actually is. I think he's 72 years old now.
Exactly, and not well.
People know that he's not in terribly good health. So he, sooner or later, he will not be leading the Palestinian National Authority, and they will have to find somebody else to do so. And at the moment, there isn't anyone, partly because, as the Palestinians claim, some of their best leaders have been assassinated by the Israelis one way or another over the years. So there's a very big question about that, and there is the danger, and we can see this with the Hamas activity at the moment, there is the danger that in the Palestinian areas that the situation will turn to civil war, or something very close to civil war, something certainly that's very, very destabilizing for the whole region, and is actually destabilizing for Israeli security. And while a lot of people in Britain would understand the attitude to terrorism shown by the Israeli authorities, and that the suicide bombings are unacceptable, and it is right that the Israelis would want to see the people who perpetrate those things brought to justice. That's all true. But what's puzzling is that who does Sharon think he's going to get if he gets rid of Yasser Arafat in some sense, or what is he going to get? He's going to get probably something that's a great deal worse even than the situation that is going on at the moment. So that's the puzzling and the worrying thing about what happens after Arafat, even before all this happened, but it's especially acute. It's an especially acute question now, I think.
Jay, I think that's exactly what Hamas was hoping to achieve, to provoke that civil war, to get rid of Arafat,
why can't the Israelis sort of see that?
Well, no, I think, Marty Schramm, you're on the right track, but your analysis has to be expanded. And I think that the big mistake being made in analyzing the situation here is that it's being taken out of the regional context. It has to be seen in the regional context of a confrontation between the United States and its allies against Osama bin Laden's al-Qaeda network in Afghanistan and the Taliban regime, which has been smashed and no longer exists. The point is this. it seems that it doesn't occur to people in the West that the Hamas organization is an ideological ally of bin Laden. And anything that's bad for bin Laden is bad for Hamas, or turn it the other way around. Hamas has to do its share to help the cause of Islamic extremism. The threat to Islamic extremism is that relatively moderate Arab regimes are in a coalition with the United States against Osama and his school of thought. That is the biggest problem of all. The way to break this coalition or undermine it is to whip up a frenzy, let's say here in Israel, between the Israelis and the Palestinians, and that's one of the things, one of the reasons why the rampage of suicide bombings got underway, to prevent the U.S.-led coalition that includes Egypt and other moderate Arab states from being able to pose a united front. And the other reason is, as was mentioned before, again by you, Marty Schramm, General Zini's mission. Every time a potentially successful peace effort gets underway, extremists here, mainly on the Palestinian side, resort to extreme forms of violence to torpedo it. And that's what happened as soon as General Zini arrived, and not by coincidence. So I think those are two things that have to be borne in mind.
Okay, if I may, there is an academic at Birzeit University by the name of Nadir Said, who apparently did a poll this past fall showing that from September to October, support for Islamist groups, including Hamas, in the Palestinian Authority-controlled territories, rose from 23% to 31%. If Hamas is so closely allied with Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, that portends trouble, not only in the Middle East, but I would say throughout the world.
No doubt about it. There are different strains or threads in the Palestinian and Islamic movements from a trend towards westernization and secularization to extreme religiosity and anti-Western attitudes. And that's part of an ongoing struggle. But the fact that the poll showed an increase to 31%, assuming that the poll is accurate and that many people on the Palestinian side were not reluctant to express their true opinions, that does not give the Hamas that much of an edge. It still shows that the non-extremist percentage is the overwhelming majority. And the important thing here, which I think has to be said with regard to what Sean O'Grady pointed out, is that although Israel did assassinate key Palestinian figures, I wouldn't call them leaders, most of them, if not all, were involved in one way or another in terrorist operations. But yeah, there are others who are not, and who are leaders and who are not quislings.
Do you think that there's a military solution to defeating Hamas? Because I would have thought the only way to do so is through...
Sean, hold on for one second. Jay, Sean has something he wants to say before we go to a break. Go ahead,
yeah,
Sean.
I mean, do you think it's possible to have a military victory over Hamas when all the evidence and similar groups and all the evidence suggests that that's not possible, and the only way to defeat it is to address the causes and address the political settlement, and sooner or later we will have to come back to that, whatever it is.
Okay, we'll take that up in just a second, but we have to take a break now. This is Global Journalist on KBIA. I'm Stuart Lurie. Welcome back to Global Journalist. You may listen to this program again, ask questions, or make comments by going to www.globaljournalist.org or here in Mid-Missouri by calling us at 573-882-9641. Before the break, we were in a rather spirited discussion on what was happening as far as Hamas's control is concerned in Palestine. Magda, we haven't heard from you in a little bit. Do you want to talk about that?
Okay. Now, the demand is that Arafat go and arrest all these suspected terrorists. Now, what if the Palestinian Authority had enough leeway to go around to round them up? Will that result in a complete end to the violence? It hasn't in the past. So what makes you think it will now? And I would like to quote something that I found rather interesting in today's Independent, quoting someone called Tali Lipkin Shahak, who said the doomsday prophets were right. This is a prominent Israeli commentator with extensive contacts within the military. She said, Ariel Sharon is taking Israel to the place with which he is most familiar and enamored, which is war. I found that rather telling.
Well, that may be very telling, Magda, but that's not the feeling here in Israel. Sharon has a consensus at the moment in favor of his effort. It's true that the Labor Party has reservations about the severity and the intensity of these operations, but the principle of taking action against an organization that does not fulfill its obligations, namely the Palestinian National Authority, and which really acts with duplicity. You said that that these people were arrested and that didn't do any good. It was the Secretary of State Colin Powell who referred to what the Israelis call the revolving door system, where Hamas and other terrorists were arrested, kept in jail for a couple days, and then released. And even this time around, none of the big fish were picked up.
But you weren't able to defeat them militarily. You just weren't able to do it.
Question, please, if I may. One at a time,
please.
I'm sorry.
Arafat's own idea and his own initiative.
Okay, Magda?
Yes. Now, if you have an unarmed civilian population that is under siege, that is being constantly bombarded, does that mean you're going to succeed in getting the suspected terrorists? If you go and tie, let's say, the Palestinian authorities' hands and not enable them to carry out what you're asking them to do, will that solve the problem? I mean, it seems like rather vicious circle.
Stuart, if I may interject,
please, Marty.
This is Marty Schramm. If I may interject for 1 second, there's one overriding thing that I've always really wondered about, and I've been trying to puzzle through when it happens all throughout the world, and the Middle East is the perfect place to talk about it. What do Islamics, or what do people in Lebanon, for example, Magda, think when they read the reports and see on television that a suicide bomber has gone in just to kill a bunch of innocent civilians, young teenagers, pregnant women having lunch in a pizzeria, things like that, and not aiming at any military or governmental target at all, just innocent people.
I'll answer you by telling you that the Lebanese people who have been on the receiving end of such terrorism themselves feel with innocent civilians. However, they insist that others who may not have the background do a little bit of homework and find out the context and the history and the reasons behind all of that. These things don't happen in a vacuum. You can't just say that these incidents occur because they hate us, they hate our way of living. And I'm saying this as an American.
Yes.
Okay? You have to find out the root causes of these problems and deal with them. You cannot keep ignoring them and stick your hand in the sand. It's not going to go away that way.
Well, let me ask a question here.
And I want to make the facts, put the facts straight. You incorrectly said this is an unarmed population. This is a population which has been firing mortar shells at Israeli settlements, has been firing, sniping along roads outside of Israel or inside of Israel, which has been manufacturing the mortars and manufacturing surface-to-surface missiles and firing them. All of that, not to mention the 50,000 M16 rifles that Israel gave to the Palestinian National Authority when it took the responsibilities which it has not fulfilled so that its police would be properly armed, and the police then used those rifles against Israeli civilians, soldiers, settlers, tourists, you name it. So it's not an unarmed population by any means, and not to mention the smuggling that goes on all the time for profit and for idealism, perhaps often through tunnels from the Sinai into the Gaza Strip or else by means of the Mediterranean Sea to float the contraband in to the Gaza Strip. So you see, it's not such a simple case of martyrdom vis-a-vis the Israelis.
If I may ask a question to change the subject slightly, there was a story in the New York Times this morning, and I guess yesterday it was in the Dallas Morning News, about an FBI memo saying that going back to 1993, the Hamas was meeting here in the United States to start a fundraising campaign to finance attacks against Israel. There is a paragraph at the end of the story quoting a Hamas leader, the story says, by the name of Sheikh Mohammed Sayyam, telling a group in Los Angeles, "I am going to speak the truth to you," and I'm quoting from the Times now, "it's simple, finish off the Israelis, kill them all, exterminate them, no peace ever." Is this what the Israelis are really up against vis-a-vis the Hamas and other groups in Palestine?
Who is that to?
Well, I'm asking the whole group.
I want to be the first one to take it, so I'll wait my turn.
Magda.
Lord only knows, but if that's the case, and if it was said in a relatively public forum, so much for our intelligence capabilities. Why didn't anyone catch on to it?
I would like to ask another question. The thing that surprised me about the New York Times article, I didn't see the Dallas Morning News one the day before, but the Times was just trying to match it, is the startling question that's raised but never really explained is, when the United States knew about this 8 years ago and has monitored the group ever since then, and has been keeping track of how much money was raised and then sent in the United States and sent to the Middle East. The question is, what did the government know? When did it know it? And what did it do? And if it didn't do anything, why not?
This speech, according to the New York Times, was made in 1994.
Right. And this was the first thing was in a meeting in a hotel in Philadelphia.
Right, but this speech was made to a fundraising meeting
in
Los Angeles.
And they've been monitoring all the way through there what these groups have done. And it was only just this past week that the United States government clamped down on a charity that was based in Texas that had been considered to be the funneling front group for the to take the money from the United States and send it over to the terrorists. That's at least what the U.S. government charges now.
Yeah. Jay, has there been anything in Israel about fundraising by the Palestinians in the United States and how successful it's been?
No, not at all. It hasn't been very high in the headlines. I know that it's coming up over the weekend because I'm involved in a major story, the breaking of a major story here on where I am at the moment at the Israel TV, something that we've been working on investigatively, but I can't go into detail about it now for the American TV as well. But this is the story that, with regard to Hamas. I think that it should be made. Anybody who considers Hamas a possible alternative to the Palestinian leadership of Arafat and his Fatah or Palestine Liberation Organization, simply as a peace partner or alternative, is simply missing the point. Hamas is not an inherently dangerous organization because of its military capabilities, but because of its ideological concepts. Its concept is very simple. There should be no Israel, and there can be no compromise with Israel. Palestine is an Islamic waqf, which means a religious legacy, and therefore it must be under Islamic control. So one way or another, sooner or later, that's what's going to happen. And the money that's raised for Hamas is raised not just for arms and sabotage, but also to create an infrastructure through welfare for the people who follow the leadership of Hamas.
Sean, I think you had a question about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, my question is, my point is this. How that is may all be true, but then it makes Sharon very short-sighted, because everything that he does makes the defeat by and the humiliation and disintegration of Arafat's regime more likely, and the triumph of groups like Hamas more likely to replace him. And that's not in Israel's interest, I would have thought, in the long run. And the second thing is to say that does anyone really think that this can be, you know, unfortunately, there can't be a military victory against terrorists? We know this with the IRA. There's only needs a handful of them to cause enormous death and destruction and destabilization of political situation.
So what you're saying is there has to be a negotiation.
You have to look towards a political settlement.
That gets to the point that Magda had raised earlier when you talked about what was Sharon expecting. It's quite possible that Yasser Arafat is fully incapable of exercising any real significant control, and I know the United States and Israel are both demanding that he do it, but I've always thought that he's been afraid that he'd be assassinated if he ever really tried to crack down, and I begin to think that even if he tried, he couldn't succeed anyway. So,
But he's better than Hamas.
Pardon?
He's better than Hamas, though,
yes.
Isn't he?
Right.
Well, once again, going back to the surveys, the surveys of Palestinians show that most Palestinians favor a political settlement and favor a two-state settlement in the Middle East. How is Hamas going to succeed if that's the case?
No, I'm not sticking up for them. What I'm saying is that why is it
that,
Israel
doing
is doing
now,
what it's doing?
That's the only way, because that's what Hamas's big fear is, I think, Stuart, that 70% of Palestinians may favor a political solution with a separate Palestinian state. So better now to get a bloodbath going so that doesn't happen if you're Hamas. I think that's what they're thinking.
We have less than 2 minutes left, and I would like to go around the horn here and have each of you take just a few seconds to talk about what the situation will be 1 year from now in the Middle East. Jay Bushinsky first.
Well, Ariel Sharon may still be the prime minister. He may not. If he's not, I think the next prime minister will be Benjamin Netanyahu, who may pose less of a problem to people who consider Sharon an inherent warmonger.
Okay.
He will be a hardliner, and Israel will hang tough.
Okay. Magda?
I fear further radicalization within Palestine and perhaps even in the Arab world if a political settlement is not reached.
Okay.
Very fast.
Sean?
Well, I would have thought that Arafat would have gone by then. I would have thought that there would be no alternative but to put some sort of UN international peacekeeping sort of force in there. And
Marty Schramm, I'm sorry, Sean.
Palestine would have fallen apart.
Okay. Marty?
If you'd asked me in 1996, I would have said there'd be a separate Palestinian state and peace. If you ask me that now, which you are, I think Yasser Arafat will not be around, maybe be dead. And there'll be bloody war.
Okay, we are out of time. Our guests today have been Martin Schramm in Washington, Sean O'Grady in London, Jay Bushinsky in Jerusalem, and Magda Abu Fadl in Beirut. Our director is Mary Furness, and our producer, Tianbo Huang. For All, I'm Stuart Lurie, global journalist. We'll be back next week.